Hello and welcome to the Entrepreneurial Journey podcast. Today I have Jerry Strain with me. Hello, Jerry. How are you?
I'm very good, Rebecca. Thank you.
Good, good. Now, Jerry, I've got Jerry on the podcast because he is a director of a football club, and I have never interviewed a director of a football club. And it sounds to me like one of the hardest businesses to run in the entire universe. Because as far as I can tell, they don't make any money. They're always in trouble of one kind or another. And the players are quite tricky to manage. Now, you can put me straight on all of that, Jerry, and tell me, how the heck did you end up as a director of a football club, and which football club is it?
Oh, firstly, it's Hamilton Academical Football Club, a Scottish team who were founded in 1874. So they're largely an institution in Scotland. And the God's honest truth is, I don't know how. The football club that I'm involved with is Hamilton Academical. They're a Scottish, they're actually an institution. We were founded in 1874. So quite how I found myself to be appointed as a director, I genuinely don't know. My life's journey is a bit of a contradiction in itself. So, but I think you'll always get where you're intended to get to. Mm-hmm. I've been involved with Hamilton Accies maybe for the last 7-8 months.
Right.
Not directly as a director or an investor or anything. I was actually a football agent. So my involvement was football based initially. And then it just progressed, an opportunity came up. I'm looking at ways to invest in a club, to take a shareholding in it, if that's something that's possible. And the chap who owns it, had extended an opportunity that I couldn't knock back. It ticks so many boxes for me, socially. The club do a lot for the community.
Right.
My own personal business interests, we do a lot for the community. So there's a good alignment there, good synergy. It ticks a lot of boxes because I love football. I wasn't good enough to make it as a David Beckham or a Ronaldo.
Not many are, to be fair.
So after plenty of rejection, I had to find another way into the game. I tried being an agent, that never worked. So maybe third time lucky, I'll make a good director.
Well, you've got to keep trying. I looked at your profile and I thought, oh God, he was a footballer once upon a time.
Yeah, no, I tried. I went down to Swindon Town on a view to trying to become a professional footballer.
Right.
Went okay, but I wasn't good enough at the end of the day. And then I've bounced about, different bits and pieces. I just was not good enough. You've got to grab a mirror and look at it. There's a bit of luck involved. If you could make a career through being determined and through wanting it, I'd still be playing today.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, it needs a bit of ability.
It does. I'm a huge fan of you create your own opportunities, but there does become a point where you go, actually, I'm not good enough to do this.
Yeah.
I could never have been a singer or a dancer because, I have the coordination of a baby gnu on acid, basically. I could have created as many vision boards as you like of me being a world-class dancer. It was never going to happen.
Yeah.
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 There's got to be an element of talent somewhere of you being good at something and then building on that and practicing on that. Definitely. Yeah.
To be fair, you're probably better dance than I am.
One day we'll put it to the test, Jerry. So businessy wise, we'll come back to the football. So what's your day job? What do you actually do for a living then?
That's a good question.
Like most entrepreneurs, where do I begin?
Yeah. Well, my day job, I own a few businesses, but we're going through a transition period.
Okay.
My main core business is a company called Document Solutions, which was set up in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I then bought the other shareholders out in 2017. Mm-hmm. One was my former boss, and another guy was a colleague. A guy called Dave McCartney, he's a legendary guy, and a guy called Lee Allinson, who I worked aside for about 10 years.
Right.
We were all directors together, and I'd fallen seriously ill 2017, to the point that I think I was expected not to be here.
No way, I did not know that.
Yeah, a bit of bad luck, but it was an illness. It started off with a blood clot from a broken wrist, and it manifested itself into pneumonia, heart failure and sepsis. So,
Jerry, I'm so glad you're here.
So am I. Funnily enough.
Yeah.
But no, I was in a bit of a bad way. And what I realised as I came out of the illness was that had I passed away at that time, my family would have gotten whatever the business decided to give them, because I didn't own it lock, stock and barrel. So, and the lesson in it was I thought what I was doing was right, but it wasn't. You know, you need to get yourself insured properly, get all these boxes ticked. And I hadn't done it. So it was almost like a second chance of ticking the boxes that I needed to tick to provide. And I've done that. And thankfully, the guys allowed me to buy them out.
Brilliant.
So I've owned this business now since September 17 outright. Obviously, COVID kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
Like every other SME, well, most SMEs in the UK, or even globally. We pretty much could have lost our business overnight.
Yeah.
Because we rely on other offices being open. So again, another opportunity to sit and look at things. And I thought, how do I keep my staff in a job? Mm-hmm. Because I promised them that they would keep their jobs. I didn't think COVID was as severe as it turned out to be.
No.
So I promised everyone to keep their jobs. So therefore, I was in hock to keep them in a job. So I came up with this plan of start selling commodities that are cross-transferable, like HR solutions, IT, telecom solutions, property services, because offices were changing and downsizing and having to remodify. And then that's now manifested itself into, we've got a group of companies called the DS Business Solutions Group.
And that
consists of six different companies. And aside that is Document Solutions, which isn't part of that group yet, but the long-term plans would be for the group to buy Document Solutions. And where that kind of turns me on is that my goal is not, it's not, I'm not driven by money for myself. I got a great buzz and fulfillment out of what I can do with what I have and seeing other people prosper and progress. So my goal, if I'm allowed to share it, you know, is that I want to try and create 6 or 7 millionaires
in the world,
through the group structure that I have.
Fantastic.
And it's a very, very simple process. I find the right person to come in.
Mm-hmm.
They grow that business organically. And in 3 or 5 years time, whichever time frame we've set, I buy the business from them or they buy it from me.
Right.
And either way, one of us makes out of it. So that's the plan. And how I got there was just through continually evolving. Do you know, and it's a good lesson I got years ago from an old guy. And he says, one option, every day you wake up, you can either repeat what you did or you can evolve. Mm-hmm. Took me maybe 5-10 years to understand what he meant.
Right.
But now I try and learn from the day before and do something different the next day.
That's fab. I love that. I very rarely interview entrepreneurs who are only in it for the money. Most entrepreneurs are in it to do something, give something back, share something, help others. There's very few. That probably says more about the people I like to interview than anything else, because quite frankly, if they're in it for the money, I find that a bit dull. Like, you know, great, that's nice, that's not really an interesting story.
Yeah. I think I don't know why I have the views that I have. They're probably social views, you know, growing up, you know, there's probably a common denominator that anyone who's involved in business, unless you've inherited it, there'll be a deeper drive in there. So I think my own experience growing up and the kind of social circumstances that I was exposed to have given me that bit of drive that I've got. Because myself and my brother were brought up by my mum on her own. So
the sound's gone wobbly again, Jerry.
All right, are you still there? Yeah.
Yeah, you've come right. Back.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, myself and my brother were brought up by my mother on her own.
Okay.
And we never had much as a family. So I think I was very aware from a young age of what I didn't have.
Yeah.
You take that in your adulthood with you. Mm-hmm. It becomes a driver to try and make sure that, if you like, as you get older, you learn different terminologies, but the legacy that you leave,
yeah.
Make sure you're leaving a better legacy than the one that you the one that you inherited.
Mm-hmm.
There's a massive bit of that's a drive for me. And mm-hmm. Another bit is just is weird. It's a fulfillment when I look at the staff that I've got and the journeys that they're on. And then you sit back and I'm guilty of not appreciating what I've done or what I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm always looking for the next thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not content. I need to find contentment somewhere, but I don't know where, I don't know how.
Jerry, can I give you a clue?
Of course, yeah.
Give you a clue. It's right under your nose. It's literally right here. Yeah. Right under your nose.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. We spend our whole time looking for contentment out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And we think it's out there somewhere, or we think it's in the next deal, or we think it's in the next job, or the next whatever. It's here. It's literally here.
Yeah.
That's where it is. Yeah. And you can contentedly grow a business, and you can contentedly be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, but when you've got a face of radio, you don't look in the mirror. maybe that's why I can't find it.
Yeah, you're not looking. You're not looking in the mirror. Oh, that's so funny. You're right. Entrepreneurs, we get itchy feet, don't we? We get, you know, we get fidgety and like, well, what do we do next? And I think, and I kind of really relate to what you're saying, and a lot of our guests are very, very similar to that. And I think it's a desire to do better, to always do better, to always improve, maybe help more people, maybe see more people succeed, maybe, I don't know, serve more customers. I think there's a thirst for doing better, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there is. I mean, our reputation, I don't know what level of due diligence you've done on the business and myself and so on, but the reputation we have amongst my customers is second to none.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's second to none is because I've got the right people carrying out that service. Now, yeah. It's no doubt to me, I can certainly drive it and I can push it, mm-hmm. and I can insist on it being at a certain level, but the guys and girls who are otherwise who go and deliver it, they need to have that desire within mm-hmm. themselves to set that bar high. So there's a coming together of fate there almost, that
mm-hmm.
you find the right people at the right times, I think. And I'm lucky with the guys and girls who work here, that they're predominantly good people. You know, they're root of it. They want to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
What runs parallel with that is my own desire. I mean, I'm very aware that as an individual, I try to be charitable. I try to do, you know, I do a lot for charity. I always have done my whole life, but the power of a business and charity is far greater than the power of an individual.
It's true.
So my motivation for that piece is tied in there. And we, as a business, myself and Paul Mullen, who's a director here, have just decided we're setting up a community pot. We've got a motion in Parliament because of the charity work we do.
No way.
Yeah, Westminster last year.
Wow.
So we got a motion in Parliament as a thank you for what we do. But again, as you evolve and you grow, it's now a case of, well, let's all that cash that we're generating and we're putting into these different places, let's put it into our own pot. And it goes specifically from point A to point B.
Oh, fantastic.
So that you know that the person at the other end of it is getting 100% of the proceeds, or as close to that as possible. So we're in the process of setting that up. We've got a food bank, which we've had now for 4 years.
I saw that. Yeah.
We run my food bank, and we do a school uniform initiative. So every August for kids going back to school, across our kind of demographic area and Northern Ireland, we'll get customers over there as well. We provide school uniforms, so we donate the uniforms to the families that need them. So there's so many different drivers, and none of them are. The irony is, it's not to drive a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, or it's like you can just touch so many people by doing the simplest of things. And it's hard to quantify it, put in words, but there's people who I don't doubt we've helped. I don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
I probably walk by them in the street, or shopping centre or something.
Yeah.
Somehow we might have contributed positively, and that's a massive, massive driver.
It's huge, and actually I think that's the purpose of small to medium sized enterprise is to employ people in your community, train them up, give them a really good job, skills, pay them properly, and then give back. I think that's the whole purpose of small to medium sized enterprises. Yeah. I really do.
No, I'd agree with that, and I don't bring politics into this, but I remember David Cameron, I think it was, had said something about the big society. And he was looking for people to be entrepreneurial, and this is going back, I mean, long before he opened the doors to Brexit.
Well, that went so well.
Oh, it's fantastic, wasn't it?
There we are now.
Moving on quickly. unlike your supply chain.
Yeah. Goods and materials are just flowing freely.
Oh, my God. Just less content. Yeah. But I think maybe, I don't know how well that, I mean, not a lot of people in Scotland listen to Conservatives, but there's a massive amount of small business up here.
Yeah, it's huge.
And I'm not taking it away from the Conservative Party, but I don't think the people up here are invested in small business because that instruction comes from Westminster or Downing Street. I think that, so then it takes you a deeper level and you look at what's round about you and it's like, you get a fight or flight scenario, and when you grow up, and we call them schemes up here,
yeah,
of estates, you learn you have to fend for yourself, and I think that's then systematic and becomes really prevalent on a business platform. The guys and girls that have come through that system realize that, well, if you don't do it for yourself, it's not going to happen.
Nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's going to do it for you. No, and I think there's something about, and I've lived in Scotland for 26 years, so
wow.
I know about the schemes, but in Manchester, the council estates, council estates, and you have, my upbringing similar to yours, single parent, two kids, and you went without, and I'm going to ask you, have you got kids now, Darren?
I've got an 11-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter who's cool. Just apple in my eye.
Oh, that's so cute. That's really cute. Wait till she's a teenager. Anyway.
I may not survive that long, but I'm insured.
You will. There's something, and that giving back resonates with us, as I say, a lot of entrepreneurs. But is there anything you brought from that not having thing in your childhood today? Because the one thing that I brought with me was that I was determined my children would all have new bikes,
right?
Because when I was growing up, I only ever got secondhand bikes,
right? Okay.
And I have a really vivid memory of one Christmas, my mum going, ta-da, there's your Christmas present, and as a child going, I was the most disappointed I've ever experienced in my whole life, because I had a vision of the bike I wanted and then I had this bike.
Right.
And so in my adult life, it's like, no, the children are getting new bikes. That's it.
Do you know, that's interesting you've said that, because there's probably other stuff in here, but immediately my reply to that is football strips.
Okay.
For my son. And I've never ever thought of that before, but now you've mentioned that, there's not a football strip that he wants that he doesn't get.
Yeah.
But I remember as a kid wanting, because I just love football, I just wanted strips. My mom couldn't afford it. Don't get me wrong, we were loved and looked after, but we never got, if it was a new Celtic strip out, a new Rangers, or whatever team it is, you know. Maybe careful because you're in a podcast. You've never done this before. A team, a Hamilton Accies.
We have a friendly audience. They don't care.
You know, I think, yeah, it's interesting you've said that because in my whole life, I've never thought of, there you go, there's a lesson. But what I would say, though, is that the biggest lesson I've learned, and this has been a sore one, and I don't mind sharing this at all, is that my goal and motivation has been to provide. So not only for my staff, for my customers, for charity, the kind of charity cases and causes we've got, but for my family.
Mm.
And what I was negligent of was that providing is not everything.
Mm.
So it's okay putting on a lifestyle. It's okay putting on holidays and football strips or dolls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if you get a good wife, she just wants a cuddle on the sofa.
Yeah.
And you're blind to that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not until it's too late that you realise it.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge lesson. And that's a direct link to the kind of grown-up piece of not having, because right away you ignore the emotional piece.
Yeah.
You focus on survive. And then you find somebody who loves you for who you are, but you're too busy focused on the provide.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sore one. You know, because mm-hmm. what you're essentially doing is you're neglecting a part of you that's free, it's immediate, and it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And you're focused on all the other stuff that's irrelevant. Mm-hmm.
And do you think that near-death experience flipped that for you?
No, it wasn't that. There was something else that flipped that for
me. Okay, you don't have to share.
The near-death piece just, what that did was it gave me an appreciation of my desire to set up a business myself was to provide.
Mm.
And I was going along blindly thinking I had done that. And then when you're hit with that near-death piece and you think, God almighty, I've not actually done what I thought I was doing. How dense is that? And because it was Einstein that said, keep doing the same thing, expecting different outcomes, insanity or something. So I own 33% of a business. I'm doing 100% of the work. I've got good guys around about me, you know, but at the end of the day, family will get 33% of what they choose to give them, 33% off. Mm-hmm. And it's not until you're nearly dead you think, hold on a minute, do you know what I've been doing for the past 5 years? And when and then another irony kicks in, because I care about people, I love people, you know, people, I'm a people person. And the guy, Dave McCartney, who was the big boss, if you like, of the company I was involved in, I love Dave to bits, you know, hard taskmaster, but a good guy.
Right.
I was afraid to ask him to buy him out, you know, because I felt a loyalty to him.
Right.
Right. So again, there's another lesson, there's no loyalty in business, you know, which I'm still learning to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But I was afraid to ask Dave to buy him out because I felt I owed him for giving me the chance. And I did that when I finally got the courage to phone him. He says, I can't believe it's taking you as long. And I was standing at a hospital appointment with my son, and I felt like an idiot. I'm like, I don't believe this. You know, like, again, there's another. Do you know what? So this is what Hamilton Accies have hired. Somebody who's not the brightest.
Oh yeah, you don't ask, you don't get, that's for sure.
And
there's a few, I'm gonna come all the way back to the people that you employ, because you said something and I'm gonna challenge you on it, Jerry, because you said, you know, I'm really lucky, I employ great people.
Yep.
I'm gonna disagree with you and go, do you know what, you create an environment in which it's easy for good people to be great.
Right, okay. Right, if that's how they see it, then that's a huge compliment. Do you know, if that's how they see it, I can't speak for them, but what is it, the people, I don't know if I know how to name them, like we've got Scott, we've got Paul, we've got Tina, we've got Caitlin, we've got another Paul, but Paul Mullen is my service director, he's been with me for 9 years.
Right.
I mean, I look at the growth in Paul personally and business-wise and acumen-wise and the journey that Paul's on. And I think, wow, that's, you know, that there's no amount of money in the world that can give you that satisfaction.
No.
But then at the same token, Paul needs to want to go and do that. I can't make him want to do that.
I think the key to running a great business is spotting that potential in people.
Yeah.
And then allowing that potential to flourish and grow, whereas a lot of businesses and leaders spot the potential and then just squash it.
I think that's where I'm different. So when I referred back to the group structure about mm-hmm. 8 millionaires, so I'm saying millionaires, it could be tens of millionaires, it could be whatever, be what they want to be, but that's not looking at this immediate piece for the people who own the companies, it's their families.
Yeah.
But there's a pressure, you've got a responsibility. So how do you deliver beyond your own responsibility?
Yeah.
And that's by kind of planning ahead. So that's the rationale behind it. So I would never suppress anyone's growth. I wouldn't. It's touch wood, my own growth's never been suppressed, to be fair. I've been encouraged most of my career. Apart from football, because they realised that it wasn't the right thing to do, was encourage me.
It wouldn't have been fair.
No, I
think that's lovely. It's a really nice way of working, and you feel fulfilled as you see other people succeed.
And that
thing about not suppressing somebody's potential, I'm guessing, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you see that person's potential actually is going to be fulfilled elsewhere outside of the business, then I'm guessing you would encourage them to look outside of the business.
Yeah, that's bizarre you mentioned that. And I'm glad to see it that way, because we've got a guy, Scott Kelly, who works for us. He's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He joined us through a platform called Groups to Work. So basically, it's not job centre-like, but it's community-based support. And when he came in to work with us, his people skills weren't to a great level, and he hated the telephone. Right, but he came for an admin job. And we took him on, and he's grown now. So that's like 5 years ago. So he's still here 5 years later. But the growth in him as a human is massive. The growth in his confidence is massive. The growth in his capability and skill set is massive. But the most important thing is he told me about 3 years ago that he wanted to join the police.
Okay.
And I actually wrote his application out with him.
Brilliant.
And he's still here just now. He was in a motorbike accident, so he couldn't go and pass the medical piece.
Right.
But again, it ties back into the driver and the goal. So when he leaves, if he chooses to leave, I know that I've played a crucial part in his... And him going up the steps.
Yeah.
And when he's sitting talking to his kids or whoever he's talking to, whoever he'll think back of me fondly.
Yeah.
And that's all I want. If I can't do that, I've made a mistake. I'll put my hands up, you know, because it's not worth for everyone who's came to work here. You know, we've had to move people on and people have been happy and so on. But the investment I'm making my staff is that I want to be part of their journey and a positive part that's progressive. And the funny thing is, I brought someone in from a corporate world to head up an HR team for me.
Right.
She was brilliant, you know, in terms of processes and so on. But after the first one-to-one, she gave me a list of people that didn't fit the business.
All right.
And one of the names on that list was someone who wanted a job as a police officer. And I'm sitting, and my take on it just shows you how two people can look at the same situation so differently.
Mm-hmm.
My view of it was, that guy's been honest enough to tell me that he wants to be a police officer.
Yeah.
So that level of honesty is priceless.
Absolutely.
Right. So I'll invest in that all day long.
Absolutely.
He's been upfront. If he asks for help, I'll help him get there.
Yeah.
I see that honesty is a greater investment in his part into this platform.
Yeah.
And I don't view that as a threat. Do you know, and then I'm sitting in a dilemma thinking, well, how can two people who are professional look at it so differently? Do you know, that was
culture.
Yeah, well, you've
created a really nice open culture with feedback and, you know, giving and, you know, give and take and that honesty. And often in the corporate culture, it's dog eat dog, it's political, it's, you know, tripping people up to find mistakes, it's you know, a lot of my senior exec coaching work is in the corporate world, and it never ceases to amaze me how much energy is spent on just politics.
Yeah.
And I just think, do you know, if you actually just did your job
and go home,
and go home, your life would be so much easier. Yeah,
yeah. Go home and leave the MD.
Yeah, I know.
Go home.
I know. So yeah, I think again that's why I love small to medium sized enterprises, because you get a lot less of that nonsense and you get more honesty and openness, I think.
Well, aye, you try and encourage it. It still takes the other people to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what you're playing with, you're never going to know. But in respect to the guy that I just mentioned, his level of honesty was, I want to be a cop.
Yeah, great.
I don't know, how can we help you get there?
Yeah, totally agree.
So, and as long as he's here, I know he's doing a good, honest job, because he doesn't have to duck and dive and tell lies. He can just go and go about his business. So, yeah.
I do it with so-called competitors. You know, I do it with other coaches and consultants. Somebody last year came to me and she said, oh, I've got this way of working and I need to work out how to package it up. And I've been asked to package it up so I can sell it to other people. And I went, I'll just show you what we've done.
Yeah.
And went, are you sure? I went, yeah, we're like, there's 7 billion people on the planet. There's really, honestly, there's enough to go around.
No. But the conflict there is, if you come up against someone who's greedy, you know, and if they're driven by money, you're not going to get that level of respect and transparency.
Yeah, she's a really nice person. There are some people that if they'd have asked me, I'd have gone, no, I don't really like you.
Is that honesty again? You can't beat it.
Yeah, we're Mancunian. We say it how it is. I wouldn't say I don't really like you to their face. I would just make something up. But yeah, she's a good egg, and I knew she wouldn't have abused it. And in return, she's invited me into her, not quite inner circle, but certainly to her events, and you know, which means I'm meeting her clients. I'm not trying to steal anybody off her. I'm just learning her part of what she does, and it's great. I like that. There's enough for everybody. All right. So where are you going to take the football club? What's the big vision for the club?
Well, the visions, I suppose we've got different visions. My own personal vision is that Hamilton Academicals are a Scottish Premier League club.
Okay.
I would love to get the club in a position that they finish in Scotland. They break the seasons at the end of the year, and it's a top six and a bottom six.
Okay.
So if you're in the top six, you can compete and try and get a European place. If you're in the bottom six, then it's relegation or you try and stay in the league. But my deep desire for them would be to make them a top six club that actually gets into European football.
Nice.
So that would be my football drive. But aside that, we have to go and attract a fan base. It just is not there just now.
Oh.
Which is challenging, because the club's been on the go since 1874.
Okay.
With quite a densely populated area. But the people who you'd expect would be your fan base would go to Celtic Park or Ibrox to support Celtic Rangers. So it's how then do you get those guys to come into the club? And that's where the club ties really nicely with McMahon's kind of social views and initiatives, because they do a lot for the local community.
Okay.
They give free season tickets to under-18s.
Brilliant.
They do a lot of work with the schools. They do a lot of work with the rehabilitation, drug offenders and so on. There's a charity called Blameless, which one of the main men at the club is a chair for the charity Blameless, and it's they take people with addictions and reform. It's maybe people going through the criminal justice system,
right?
And they get rehabilitated, so the club's heavily involved with that as well. And we've also got, biasly, I think, the best youth academy in Scotland for football.
Wow.
You know, you've got Celtic and Rangers you're competing with, and maybe Hearts and Hibs, but the Hamilton Accies one is, I think it's certainly up there with the best. And that's another big part of the club as well. It's huge. It comes at a cost.
Yeah.
Which is obviously why I found myself in a new job, to try and generate some money for them. And
that's good.
Awareness.
And is that for girls and boys?
Yeah. Aye, the girls piece, I think, if you look at Scottish football as a whole, I think Rangers are probably you know, one of the better ones for their female infrastructure. There's a guy called Kevin Murphy at Ibrox.
Right.
I don't know what you call Rangers training ground anymore. It's changed that many times, but it just keeps changing. But Kevin Murphy, I think he was at Man City for a while, and then he was at Hearts and now Rangers.
Man City would be the other Mancunian team.
They're not really a Mancunian team. There's only one team in Manchester, isn't
there? There is only one team in Manchester.
Same as Glasgow. There's only one team up here as well. Aggies.
Obviously.
Yep. Even though we're South Lanarkshire. The female infrastructure, I think we've probably still got a bit of a way to go. I'm not as involved with the female football. The women's football as I am with the other stuff that I'm doing.
Right.
But I think that's the next big thing.
Well, after obviously being English and being female, I was a little bit excited on Sunday, shouting and screaming in the back garden as I watched it on my phone. My husband's like, shh, the neighbours are like, I don't care, this is fantastic, this is historic. Whoa. And I'm not a football fan at all, but it's like we've got a crest of the wave here. We really need to build on that because girls are going, I want to do that for my country. It's fantastic.
The aspirations, you know, there's nothing stopping anyone doing it.
No.
It's just maybe it's a society type thing again. Do you know, an acceptance of the fact that women can play football.
Yeah, you know, really, really rather well, it seems.
Well, they've done something that the English team's not managed to do.
No. And it was Germany. And
fair enough, yeah, the Germans.
We're going to mess it up. We're going to miss penalties. But we didn't. And it's like, oh, my God, we've actually done it. Yeah, unbelievable.
Wow. Fantastic to see. So I think where our women's football team's concerned, there's probably a lot of growth still to happen in that piece. You never know. Maybe that's the piece that gets us where we need to get. You never know what's around the corner.
Bit of an idea. I'll send you some stuff after this because you've sparked some imagination and there's things I can send you that will help with that. Definitely.
Brilliant. Look forward to it.
Cool. Okay. Right. Your document business. If it had a personality or a character, how would you describe it?
Oh wow. Well, we've got an ethos. It's honesty, integrity, trust.
Brilliant.
Right, and that derives from you get one hit at it. Right? So your H is honesty, I is integrity, is your trust. So you get one hit at the relationship. That's a personal thing to me. That's my view. So what I say to the guys is that everything we do, make sure that we try and get that hit right.
Yeah.
And then build on that. So as a character, I would say that it needs to have those values. We need to be, I think we're caring. I think we're efficient and we're honest as a business. The levels we go to, I don't think, and I'm not being disingenuous. I don't think we get any competitors in our space who go to the levels that my service director goes to.
Right.
To make sure our customers are looked after.
Good.
The way we try and look after our staff. I can't talk for another company, but I know that birthdays are valued to a massive degree. Christmases are valued to a massive degree. We've got our pay care plans, we've got our private health care, we've got staffing issues, and there's loads of stuff. So
nice.
I would need to see those values, yeah.
Nice.
And how we get up a level, sorry, how we get up a level, I don't know. I, that's why I'm speaking to people like yourself and I'm back to uni in August. And
right.
How do I grow? How do I grow that? And how do you make it a more solid, more competent professional?
Well, I'll book a coffee in with you, Jerry. Definitely. That's exactly what we do for business owners. That's our perfect client. Is like I've got it so far, and I know I want to get it here, but I'm not sure how to get it there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we do for business owners. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hamilton Ackies.
Yep.
What personality would they have?
You could ask so many people that question and you could get so many different answers.
Yeah.
My view of Hamilton Ackies, weirdly, would be so similar to this business.
Okay.
Because that's how I see them. That's how it's a lot. It's community driven. They care, but they just aren't punching as hard as they should.
Okay.
For whatever reason, you know, if it's monetary, if it's investment, you know, I don't know. That's part of my job, is to find out why. Mm-hmm. We've got a great board there. We've got a really strong football board. We've got a good new commercial board, and we've got a good youth board.
Brilliant.
We'll be a good leader as well. So hopefully we get it right. But I would say, I would actually probably, it's a great question. And I'd probably say the same as this place.
Right. Nice one. That's probably why you're a director there.
Well, I'm director there because they've not realised how bad I am at my job yet. I've not been found out yet.
I mean, that's the same for us all, Jerry. To be honest, the same for us all. Still waiting to be discovered.
That's it. The clock's ticking. So once my commercial revenue input is looked at the end of the season, yeah. I might be found out, you know.
Oh, brilliant. That is fantastic. I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you, Jerry. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best with all your business ventures and your charitable ventures too.
Thank you so much. And I look forward to meeting you soon, actually.